It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 15th day of December, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That, of course, is also where we tuck away one of the best secrets in broadcasting that isn't really a secret. I'm talking about the Horn chat room, HeadOn.live/chat room. Just click on the chat room tab there at the top. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you never have before. And then just jump right into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time conversation. The wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And a good time will be had by all, because, in fact, if you do so, if you come along now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Ralps and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, well, decided not to fold space here in these waning days of autumn 2020 to become Man Cave, and instead remains Sparky for reasons that are, in fact, his own. Namely, the fact that it's a gray day out in Northern California in the 50s. Well, here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's a brisk but pleasant 61 degrees inside the studio. Outside, well, outside it's behaving like a couple of days before winter. It's all of 36 degrees outside, and I've spent the day running errands. Oh my God. It was like the last helicopter out of Saigon in Kroger's today. Oh, really some bad management going on. You know, they got about 10 checkout lanes there. Only 3 of them were open. The store was packed butthole to belly button. People were piled up, you know, down the aisles trying to get through the self-checkout, trying to get through the regular checkouts. And they were actually doing a reasonably good job of socially distancing. But damn, I mean, that was just... The store manager really dropped the ball, because it was a cluster coitus. It just was. Hi, I'm Bob. So it was, and why was everybody and their cousin in the grocery store today? Because the storm of the decade is said to be on the way. Well, okay, they say the biggest winter storm of several years in these here parts is on the way. And that leads to a bit of a program note. It's cold outside. Yeah, they're talking 5-6 inches of snow. They're talking an inch of ice, maybe. And it's that mention of the dreaded three-letter word, I-C-E, that is, that sent everybody out to the stores. Because you live here long enough, and you realize pretty quick that well, Appalachian Power and their ancient, antiquated, coal-fried power grid is probably not going to be up to the task. And so as a consequence, everybody, I didn't even go to the bread and eggs aisle because I knew better. Even in a state like West Virginia that's used to snow, you say we're going to get a big snow and all the milk and bread and eggs just whoosh right off the aisle. I had to ask for half and half because all the half gallons of half and half were just gone. Yeah. And so I got my Krogering done and then had to go and get redo the propane tanks. Then had to stop and pick up 5 gallons of Eau de Kerosene. Oh, my goodness gracious, doesn't the automobile just smell lovely right now? Yes, it just makes you feel all warm and hydrocarbony, that kerosene aroma. Mm-hmm. And so I got done with all that errand running and got home. And we started putting things away. I had the last of my quart and a half or so of homemade Tom Yum soup. On a day like this, my God, it's perfect. Fiery and spicy. Make your head sweat with that wonderful flavor of the lime leaves and the galangal and the lemongrass and the onions and the garlic and the chilies and the curry and the whoa. Just fan-freaking-tastic. And so, I mean, I guess I'd say a fairly good mood. I mean, it was really pretty, the blue skies today, but, oh, sometime around, about 14 hours from now, or maybe sooner, we start getting ice and then snow. Maybe. Or it may just be rain. And then, chances of snow Thursday and Friday. But this is, you know, this isn't the Hillbilly Weather Report. Like I said, it leads to a kind of a program note. If we get a crap ton of ice, the reality is, and this is why I got all the kerosene and the propane, we'll be sitting here in the dark freezing our little tukasasasas off. Because, well, as the branches snap, so too will the frozen power lines. Because, well, I mean, we couldn't have a decentralized power grid based on renewable stuff like, oh, you know, energy from the wind and the sun. No, by God, we've got to have hydrocarbons. Coke keeps the lights on, except planet don't. So that's kind of the forecast, as it were, not so much for the weather, but for this program for the next 24 hours. If I don't tweet that, you know, we're down, we can assume there'll be a prayer meeting Wednesday for the 16th day of December. Now that I'm moving toward 3 digits of non-smokingness, today's day 91. And, next week, 97 on Monday, 98, 99, Tuesday, Wednesday. Christmas Eve will be 100 days without a cigarette. And what a delightful holiday thing that has worked out to be. And we'll cross into triple digits for the next 3 months on Christmas Day. Of course, the day after Christmas is Ferg's birthday, and back in the day, I used to take the night off so I could take him for his birthday dinner or something like that. But he's all grown up now. He'll be, how about that? Kind of weird to ponder, but he will be a quarter of a century old on the day after Christmas. namely Friday on the Front Porch. And I'll be right here. Now, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we send thanks out to those partial sponsors of the program for whom we are so very grateful. And that means thanks going out to just takes a minute here. Thank you to Nagla. Thank you to Robert. Thank you both so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. And thank you to Jeremy, First Past the Post, getting us started this evening. Sincerely appreciated. And that's that takes us down for a fundraising goal to $415. $415 finishes, $115 finishes off yesterday's funding, and then there's $300 for today. So that's it. It could be far, far worse. So we are at $415. And I had a note right before the program began. I had a note from our pal Ralphs, who said, "I'll kick in $25 if others contribute $25. And I'll contribute $25 each to Ossoff and Warnock." What a great way to help out the Horn and help out those desperately needed campaigns early on. And, not that early. The special runoff election, of course, is slated for January the 5th, and our side, the side of light and decency, is busting its hindquarters, getting folks out to early vote because early voting is opened in Georgia, and making sure that everybody who can vote does vote so that we can put Kelly Loeffler, otherwise known as Attila the Hun. You know, we didn't call her that. She calls herself that. And David Debate Chicken, Insider Trader Purdue, put them out to pasture and send in a couple of decent human beings so that we'll have 50 Democratic United States senators plus, 48 plus, 47 good Democratic United States senators plus two independents plus Joe Manchin, who presumably will still vote the right way. So that's a great thing, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. And if somebody kicks in $25 or couple of people kick in $25, that'll get us down $365 going. So thank you very kindly. I'm being told that folks are having a difficult time reaching me by email. And that may be the case because, there are I'm seeing some emails. But curiously enough, what I haven't seen is Joey's journal. And Joey usually sends that both to the bobkincaid@gmail.com address and uses the headon.live email portal. I'll see what's going on there. Thank you very kindly, Irish Dave. Yes, I have Anatole's address, and Dave, I'll have yours. Mugs will be going out. Yes, Ferg was born on Boxing Day. You remember the other day I was talking about the lovely woman from England years and years ago who would say things like, "Henry, you'd rather climb a tree and tell a lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth." Well, that self-same lady always referred to Ferg as her, "my Boxing Day baby." Mm-hmm. And that he is. So, that, okay, Gmail is having problems, Asa tells me, not on your end. And so, that explains some things. I'd gotten a note, from, Randy. Hey, Bob, your email appears to be down, probably as a result of the Google hack, very likely. Well, isn't that just, I mean, that's a strange, however shall we get Joey's journal? I'm kind of flummoxed. Well, we'll see how it plays out. Joey, if you're listening, I don't know, maybe you can do it with semaphores or something. I don't know. Nope, no difference there. Huh. Well, we may have to figure out some sort of a backup. We may have to have some sort of backup mail system if this is going to become a regular occurrence. Didn't have much email problem last night, but the hack, well, yeah, I guess it would. Even hacks have a hard time getting to West Virginia. Jesus. Yeah, Randy, that's true. I don't know if Joey and Giraffe have a Twitter account or Facebook Messenger, but either one of those, if you want to send Joey's journal through that, that'll be cool. Although it'd be a hell of a tweet thread, because Joey's journal takes up a little bit of, well, I mean, you've heard them. They're thoughty and have a lot of content that we all enjoy immensely. So, where to begin? Let's see. I got to check this out. I'm not quite getting the gist of it, Silent R. There's a little typo in there, so if you want to resend that, that'd be cool. And then I can share that with everybody else. Anatole noting in the chat room, looks like Ossoff and Warnock will be our new senators, and Mitch the Bitch can sit down and shut up. Let us not count any unhatched chickens, Anatole. Don't jinx us, because there's plenty of time for rat fuckery to take place in a place like Georgia. And we can't count on polling data or anything like that, because look how many House seats we were looking to pick up and lost House seats. That's the thing. I think there really is some. I think there was some rat screwery going on in, you know, because Republicans will cheat, like we talked about last week. Anytime they complain about something, anytime the maggots accuse someone of skullduggery or rat fuckery, chicanery even, you can bet that it's either projection, they've either already done the dirty thing, exactly the dirty thing, or they plan to do the dirty thing. Yeah, that's true. Thank you, Sparky. Joey can also send Joey's journal via Skype. It's weird, though. Some stuff did get through. No, Ralphs, I have not yet heard from Paul from Parts Unknown, but I have no doubt that in short order we will be hearing from Paul from Parts Unknown. And the Paulmans will be out there the minute, because people have lined up for the Paulmans. The minute that the Paulmans become available, I will let you know as to how many tens there are and what's spoken for and what is not spoken for. Okay? And remember, this is, of course, Trump-tanic Tuesday. Looking at the calendar, how many Trump-tanic Tuesdays do we have remaining? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. After this, there will only be 5 more Trump-tanic Tuesdays. And after that, we will go back to them being Titanic Tuesdays because Donald Trump will be gone. Bye. Bye-bye. Bye. Huh. Okay, then that is a problem. Jack letting me know on Twitter, an email I sent you 3 to 5 minutes ago returned undeliverable. Yeah, because of course it was. Strange, strange. But somehow or another, because he's magic that way, Brother Deacon Asa managed to recover Joey's journal. And hence, Bob! Burn up Atlanta. Just an addendum to the Fog Bowl game of 1988 featuring the Chicago Bears and the Philadelphia Eagles, which, thanks to Billable Rick, we do now have a final score of that game, 20-12. The Bears won. Funny story about that game, that Saturday afternoon, New Year's Eve, I was trying to start a fire in the fireplace of my parents' home and didn't realize the fireplace flue was closed. Oh, what a joy that is! Well, before I realized it, the living room was filling up with smoke. Oh, crap, here's Jeffrey. Jeffrey explains, yes, Joey panicked, called the doctor, and asked him what he should do about his flu. Jeez. Oh, thanks, Jeffrey. Yes, I panicked and got my flus mixed up. Well, anyways, the doctor, who was obviously a Republican, just told me to breathe moderately, take 2 tax cuts, and open all the borders, i.e. doors and windows. I took his advice and opened all the doors and windows to air the place out. Yes, this was the Reagan era, in which we are still mired. More from Giraffe. Then Joey called the doctor back to air him out as he informed him that his 2 tax cuts were just smoke and mirrors, or should I say the cuts were smoke and shears. Oh, the puns, they hurts as us. After I opened up the flue, I then opened up the doors, but soon realized something was missing, and that was my pet schnauzer, Mr. Smart. Mr. Smart suffered from Wanderlust, him being German, and I was really upset that he was missing. Fortunately, he had not gone far, and when I called for him, he came running back with a fire extinguisher. That's why we called him Mr. Smart. Oh, you think you're Mr. Smart? Well, this is Mr. Smarter. However, I then began watching the game again, and to my horror, I could not see the game because of what appeared to be a hazy layer of smoke covering my television screen. I thought sure that the smoke from the fireplace had ruined the television. Well, as it turned out, I soon realized that it was not the smoke from a distant fire. That would be the Sanford Townsend Band, 1978. Right you are! From a distant fire. But rather a fog had rolled in from Lake Michigan, and that was the cause of the bad picture. So all was well, the TV still worked. Mr. Smart was home safe and sound, and the house had not burned to the ground. You know, I have to start reading the voice. I use my regular voice for Joey. Some of these really call for more of a Garrison Keillor voice. An update from our friend in Florida who threw the shoe and as well threw the football game for his Gators. Saturday, after hearing that numerous friends and fans were harassing poor Marco Wilson on the Twitter-type outlets the past few days, Wilson has landed a book deal. Yes, none other than, you guessed it, Simon and Schuster will have a story about Marco and his worthless relative Marco Rubio coming to a bookstore near you. Schuster. Oh, and the sorority of Leans, who are part of the HeadOn.Live network, will be happy to know that on this day 19 years ago, the Leaning Tower of Pisa was restored, allowing visitors to venture back inside the structure. The structure was restored thoroughly and completely without having to lose its lean. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey adds,
I hope all of our leans are doing well and left leaning left. Speaking of our leans, do we have an R-lean out there? Good question, Giraffe. On this day as well, back in 1967, the Silver Bridge, spanning Point Pleasant, West Virginia to Gallipolis, Ohio, crumbled because of a structural building defect, killing 46 people. The bridge was rebuilt with much higher standards. Yes, you could say the Silver Bridge was rebuilt on the gold standard, and to this day that bridge has more equity and wealth than the entire state of West Virginia. Oh, good, we got in a dig at my beloved home state. Well, how wonderful. However, but not more wealth than big bullshit governor, make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice. The Silver Bridge leads from West Virginia to southern Ohio, where Clark Gable was from, and on this day in 1939, Gone with the Wind debuted in Atlanta, featuring Clark Gable as the dashing Rhett Butler. Oh, and by the way, it was the collapse of the Silver Bridge that spawned the legend of the Mothman. You could look it up. Oh, my stars and garters. Here's Jeffrey with a reminder. Remember Atlanta, January 5th, because frankly, Georgia, you can tell Scarlett that we do give a damn. Damn right we do. As Jeffrey and I will be returning to Georgia to damn the right because they're wrong. And finally, speaking of butlers, usually in these old movies, the butler did it. Well, in this case, speaking of Rhett Butler, the butler did not do it. Rather, Congressman Strom Thurmond actually did the butler, and he got caught red-handed. Oh, this may be the most pernicious string of punnery yet to arrive from the mind of Joey and Giraffe. But yes, on this day back in 2003, the family of Strom Thurmond admitted that Strom had fathered a child with maidservant Carrie Butler. S.E. Mae Washington Williams is the daughter of Strom Thurmond and his maidservant Carrie Butler, according to DNA testing. Okay, now what, Giraffe? Giraffe says, yeah, Strom Thurmond lived to be 100 years old, and his entire life he tried to filibutler his way out of it. Oh, for Pete's sakes. And this has been Joey's Journal for Tuesday, the 15th of December, with Giraffe raising rhetorical hell in Atlanta. Thank you for that. It will probably be the remainder of the program getting over all the punnery. Note coming in from Elbert in Rhode Island. My forecast here is predicting 11 inches of snow being dropped by the storm. I have a feeling we'll wind up with the ice. You'll get the snow and we'll be freezing in the dark. One would hope that with this much advance warning, the folks at Appalachian Power might be making what an old friend of mine referred to as preservations. But that may be just entirely too much to hope for. Okay, well, we dropped to 60 degrees and my hands are getting a little tingly, so I had to take a moment there and get the propane fired up. Propane! Yes. Thank you, Lou. In PA, the January 5th Georgia reminder is out and taken care of. I appreciate you keeping that at the forefront of my mind and helping me to keep it at the forefront of others. So we're still waiting for that $25 to come in so Ralphs can match it and send $25 each to the campaigns of Warnock and Ossoff. And that's true, Randy pointing out that there was once an NHL hockey team in Atlanta called the Atlanta Flames. Yeah, it was a horrible pun, and then they went on to become hockey didn't do too well in Atlanta, and they went to Canada where hockey does well, and became, I think, the Calgary Flames, which are handy in Calgary because it gets so godforsaken cold. Yeah, I agree. Our buddy John in PA just shared with me via Twitter a tweet from someone named Jesse Lifson, who has come up with a new name for the White House spokes creep. You know, the Christian woman who spends all of her time lying like a rug, and whom one of these days, if you buy into that theology, Jesus is going to pinch her little head right off her shoulders and flick it like a booger down into hell. K-leave McAnytime. McAnytime. K-leave McAnytime. Yeah, don't let the good Lord, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. You don't got to go home. You just have to go somewhere else. And this is curious. I can't get any other emails, but by God, I got an email from Google One. Maybe they're testing the system. Who knows? Some gets through. Some does not. Some enter. Only few arrive. Yeah, or something like that. Oh, dear. It's going to be a booger of a Trump-tanic Tuesday. See, it's happening to me now. Joey and Giraffe are having a pernicious effect on me. But regardless, we do have an abundance of Trump-tanic Tuesday information, stories. Hang on, I heard a voice. Okay, that was apparently not aimed at me. Since we spent a considerable amount of time yesterday talking about the vaccine, and Jack in Shreveport pointed out that he'd been kind of out of the loop over the weekend trying to give his brain a break, and God knows I understand that, and said he hadn't really seen the vaccine rollout team news eyewitness coverage, but tuned in today and saw it in all its silly anti-glory. Well, the White Wing, and I do mean white, has declared that I guess they want the Rona. Enter Deanna Lorraine. Now, she is sunk deep into the cult of Trump. She ran for Congress and failed. But running for Congress and failing as a Republican is actually an entree into greater and grander things. Like, well, for instance, Deanna Lorraine now has a... God, that sounds like a drag name. Sorry, but... Deanna Lorraine. That would be a drag name, wouldn't it? Deanna Lorraine. She's now a commentator. And she's in demand, I guess, on the maggot paranoid conspiracy circuit. And by God, Deanna Lorraine, well, she ain't taking no vaccine. No, hell no, not her. Not a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist maggot like Deanna.
President Trump, too, which I also don't like about it, but apparently Donald Trump just said he's willing to take the vaccine also live on TV. He said he's also willing to take it, the COVID-19 vaccine, live on TV. And again, you know, I don't like
that. You know, it happens to me sometimes, too. You're reading from an email, or in her case, from a script, because she can't do actual live broadcasting without having it all written down first. And sometimes you read the same line of text twice, because in her case, she's busy trying to look at a TV camera. She's busy trying to look at her text. Sometimes it's too much for that big old primate brain.
And that means it's way too much for the great big lizard brain of somebody like D-Man and Lorraine. So that's how she gets into trouble like that.
He said he's also willing to take it, the COVID-19 vaccine, live on TV. And again, you know, I don't like this. You know, Trump, probably 80% of your base does not want that vaccine. They are not willing to take a foreign rushed substance and jab it into our arms. I don't care who takes it. I don't care if Jesus takes it. I'm not taking the vaccine. And it's weird. And it makes me feel uncomfortable that President Trump is jumping on the bandwagon with Obama and the Clintons and Bill Gates. And now Fauci and Cuomo saying they're going to take this live on TV. We don't care. In fact, you know, the more you guys do this weird, desperate attempt to try to convince us that the vaccine is safe, that was rushed at warp speed, the more uneasy I feel with the vaccine. I don't care if President Trump. So President Trump, if you're smart, if you don't want to lose your business, please don't keep jumping on this vaccine bandwagon and saying you're going to join these clowns and take the vaccine live on TV. Please.
Yeah. Thanks to our friends at Right Wing Watch for that clip. I've remarked on a number of occasions that, to me, the people there at Right Wing Watch who watch all of this bilious stuff and capture it and then put it out there for our consideration are true American heroes. And they deserve hazard pay and probably workers' compensation. I mean, this is for what it does to their brains. On the other hand, not much is happening to the brain of D-Manna Lorraine because she doesn't have much brains to work with. Notice how she ticks off the litany of people. Why? Wait a minute. Wait. Stop. Time out. Hold up. Now, she had a perfect opening there, and she completely blew it. Why would Nitwit Nero take the vaccine? Don't you remember?
Some people say I'm immune forever. I can't get it anymore.
Huh. Wait a minute. I think this is playing into our own little conspiracy theory. I mean, not really a conspiracy theory per se. Well, maybe it is. Okay, the bottom line is, some of us, and by some of us, I mean, well, you know, me, and a few others among our community have speculated as to the idea that maybe he really didn't have the Rona. Maybe he was moved to Walter Reed for his own protection and that of his White House because he wouldn't stop running around spewing viral particles, or maybe he didn't have to. And then later on, there was reporting that he had been put on oxygen, and then the White House said, nuh-uh, and the people in the at Walter Reed said, yuh-huh. And then he went for his baby Donald go bye-bye and wave at maggots tour, in which he subjected the members of his Secret Service detail in the hermetically sealed presidential limousine to the possibility of grim death. But when all was said and done, and he was still jacked to the gills on dexamethasone.
I've never felt better. And now I can't get it. Some people say I can never get it again.
So really, I mean, I don't agree with D-Manna Lorraine. But, well, why would he need it? How long ago was it that he had it? Was that October? September? And if, in fact, he's going to take the vaccine and it's not going to be a placebo, oh, dude, I did placebos back in the 90s in my sexual Vietnam. They were so awesome.
I'd go to Jeffrey Epstein's parties and he'd say, hey, Donald, do you want a placebo? And I'd say, I don't know. Those things are pretty strong, man.
Sorry.
But we do know from a previous story that in the double-blind testing of the vaccine, that some people were given a placebo. In fact, they were injected with a small amount of sterile salt water. Is that what he's going to get? Or is it, in fact, a matter of the pernicious virulence of this virus that it would probably be a good idea for him to get it? Because, frankly, if anybody is being tested for their antibody load, you would presume, Republican or Democrat, that it would be the President of the United States of America. Because you would want to know you would want to maintain his health status. The White House, the Secret Service maintains his physical safety, and the White House medical staff, on the other hand, maintains his medical safety. So really, this is becoming a bit of a puzzlement, isn't it? Oh, and by the way, after first saying they wouldn't take the vaccine, now the White House staff and the White House, having been one of the biggest hot spots in the country for the spread of the disease. I'm trying to get a bottle of water out here. That's in case you're wondering. Now they're scrambling to get it. So all of that business about how nobody can get it except for frontline healthcare workers and people in long-term care facilities. Mm-mm. No, privilege has reared its ugly head. And okay, let's forget for a moment, if it is at all humanly possible, that Donald Trump is the President of the United States. You want the President of the United States, whomever the president is, to get the vaccine, or as they pronounce it in Mother Russia, vaccine. Sure. And you want the president-elect and the vice-president-elect to get the vaccine. But the White House staff itself? Isn't there an element of let them eat virus to all of this? Doesn't it have a kind of a Marie Antoinette-ish feeling to it? Because it does to me. But, well, maybe there'll be some extra vaccine to go around, because the likes of Demana Lorraine and Dill Beagle and the rest of that goofy crowd, those clowns won't be taking it, so there'll be some vaccine to go around. For the privileged few. Not for you. Hoi polloi. Oh, hell no, not for you. Not for me. Not for Agnes, who's immunocompromised. No, 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 no. No. Absolutely not. So, curiouser and curiouser, said Atlas. I mean, that really is a rogue's gallery of people willing to take the vaccine. Nitwit Nero, Barack Obama, Bill and Hillary, Bill Gates, Fauci, Governor Cuomo. Okay, I think you can make a solid reason for giving it to a governor of a highly populous state. So, okay, check on Cuomo. Cool with that. Dr. Fauci is upwards of 80 and is high risk and is the leading scientist of this pandemic and is going to serve as the medical advisor to soon-to-be President Joe Biden. So, okay, cool with that. Ex-presidents and their spouses? Sure, why not? I mean, we can't give it to Poppy and Barb because they're busy being all dead and everything. But what about W and Laura? And what about Richard B. Dick, big time Dick Cheney before he dicks you? Them two? I guess, yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue against it. I mean, you got to figure that Richard B., big time Dick Cheney before he dicks you, is immunocompromised. We've talked a lot about immunocompromise over the course of the last couple of years, thanks to our dear friend Dan Fisher, who will be immunocompromised for the rest of his natural born days because he, like Richard B. Dick Cheney before he dicks you, is a heart transplant recipient. So by all means, and I hope Dan gets it quickly, is able to get the vaccine quickly as well. Bill Gates, though, in that list of people who are, well, I guess he paid so much money to help develop the vaccine that he's got a proprietary right to get some of it. Is that how it works in privilege America? Because it sure does feel like it does. Let's see. Oh, thank you, Steve. Yep, mail.google.com is having problems, courtesy of Is It Down Right Now. I'm getting some emails, though. That's cool. So that'll cut down on the chaos just a little bit. Precisely. Steve in New York pointing out. So, Deanna Lorraine, vaccine bad, injecting bleach good. Yes. And inserting ultraviolet lights. Also good. Maybe, says Jack in Shreveport, Trump was just jealous of all the media that a black nurse was getting for getting the vaccine. Oh, dear God, I didn't even think about that. But, yeah, Jack, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you may have nailed it. Jeremy in Vermont says, White House staff backed down when questioned on why they should all get it first and said that they'll wait their turn. Sure they will. God damn it, it'll be like men trying to get into the lifeboats on the Titanic. See, there's a Titanic reference on this Trumptanic Tuesday. Ah, get the hell away. You're just some poor woman from steerage. Go fucking drown. I'm important here, damn it. Ah, well, it worked. Note coming in from Dave number 11. Testing my privilege here in the interweb tubes fast lane. It got through. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, Trump's not taking the vaccine, you fool. He's going to take a vitamin B complex shot and let the other suckers like Obama take the real COVID-19 vaccine. Deanna Lorraine is a lightweight when it comes to conspiracy theorizing. Oh, let it fly, Brother Deacon, let it fly. Oh, and he'll be buzzing on that vitamin B.
Yeah, it's called a B complex shot because it makes me feel very complexicated when I take it. I feel great. It's almost as cool as a placebo.
True enough, Silent R. Lamar asking, due to the fact that Trump wants credit for the vaccine, why would he not take it? Yeah, I want an answer to that. I really do, more now than I did last night. I want an answer as to how long this vaccine provides protection. Rather, yeah, because I'm getting a little curious. Not conspiracy paranoid curious, no. But definitely curious. Oh, and things were a little bit slow, but hey, I'm proud to announce that Silent R. Lamar joined in and met Ralph's challenge, so that means we're down to 365. Yeah, 365. Thank you, Silent R. And thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island jumping in to get us down to 315. So we're only 15 bucks away from having yesterday funded. That is freaking awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Charlene, very kindly, a member of the founding member of the Sorority of Leans. Very kind of you indeed. Thank you. A note courtesy of Baltimore Bob. From the Twitter page of novelist Harry Kunzru, I feel I may have to individually insult every member of the outgoing administration in crude and personal ways. Mike Pence, you repressed, joyless, would-be witch finder. Every time you spoke, you always looked like you were straining to expel an enormous bolus of your own hypocrisy from your clenched sphincter. Betsy DeVos, you blandly foolish, soulless, entitled, child-stealing witch, rotting like a corpse inside your Chanel suit. All the generals, you spineless, buzz-cut, phallus-brained, plastic Spartans fawning and wriggling to distract yourself from your moral cowardice. Kaylee McEnany, you evacuated husk of a mean girl cheerleader, the cavity where your heart once was pumped full of spite and moronic lies. Jared Kushner, you vacuous, dainty, preening, overpromoted nub of mediocrity, squeezed like an entitled smear of toothpaste into a silk suit bought with tear-stained dollars wrung out of the suffering tenants of your slum apartments. Ivanka Trump, you monstrous slug of vanity. You infantile ninny so marinated in self-regard that in your pea brain you believe we ought to love you for your crimes. Mike Pompeo, you know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. Mike Pompeo, you bubble, you booby, you flatulent zero, that roiling in your ample guts that you mistake for world-shaking significance is just the acid reflux of irrelevancy. Don Jr., you scabrous, single-nostriled, unloved, elephant-murdering human wreckage, vibrating with bitterness and impotent rage at all the opportunities you've squandered. Sarah Sanders, blast from the past. Sarah Sanders, you crude, hulking, beetle-browed bully, working your multiple chins as you masticated another stinking quid of falsity, spitting again and again on the people you were supposed to inform. All you staffers and interns, so eager to crunch your way in your shiny new work shoes over the bodies of the poor and powerless, I smite you and cast you out, one by one. Eric Trump, you pallid, clammy, suppurating, nocturnal, semi-human grub. Your absence of charisma is your only notable trait, and the act of flushing you from memory will be so smooth and painless that in a month people will find it hard to picture your moon face. Rudy Giuliani, you capering, cartoonish, skull-faced bag of graft and corruption, too stupid even to ask who's pulling your strings, just so long as you can cake your crusty face in TV makeup and clack your jaw at a camera. And, of course, Stephen Miller, you weeping pustule upon the social body, you dreg, you homunculus, you noxious slime fetched from the gaping cavity of Jim Crow. One day may you find yourself walking barefoot across hot sand, desperate for water, crying for your missing child. And Harry concludes, with that I'll rest a while and go find a street corner to dance on. By God, that's genius. That was an honor and a privilege just to read. Again, from the Twitter page of novelist Harry Kunzru. That's pure magic. I don't even know which I like best. Pretty fond of entitled smear of toothpaste into a silk suit. That's good. But then again, it all is Mike Pompeo, you bubble. Which, of course, reminds me of the late, great William Charles Duncan Fields, W.C. Fields to the rest of us, who in The Bank Dick declared, upon meeting the fiancée of his daughter, whose name was Og Oglesby, sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. Because back then, even though it was pre-Hays Commission, you still couldn't say fart in the movies. It would be, we'd be a while getting to that. Mm-hmm. So it looks like some email is getting through. That's a wonderful thing. And because it's Trump-tanic Tuesday and we celebrate great moments of Trump-tanic intellect, it's been a while since we've had a nomination for
Melanie and her son.
Well, this is just a nomination for Melanie, otherwise known as melanoma to you and me. But she decided that it would be a good idea for her to visit a hospital to read to children. The story comes from The Hill by Joseph Choi, who notes that every year during this joyous time, Melanoma Trump, now famous for having said, "Fuck Christmas. Who gives shit about fuck about Christmas? Christmas, fuck Christmas. Christmas, fucking. I don't give fuck about Christmas. No one give fuck about Christmas." She's a real, holly jolly hero type. By the way, Dan Fisher will be joining us on a week from Wednesday. And Dan and I are working up a sure enough horn holiday special. And I'm looking forward to it. And I just mark your calendars. But melanoma went to Children's National Hospital today, where she walked into the hospital and they had found some poor little girl child and dressed her up and walked her to the Christmas tree. The little girl had on a mask, and upon entering the room and sitting in front of the Christmas tree, so did Melanoma, but it didn't last long, because no sooner was she seated in front of the tree than she removed the mask in order to talk to children about Christmas. Although I don't, who gives shit about Christmas? Let's pick it up when she removes her mask, shall we? It would help if I actually knew how to drive this thing. Oh, I hate tiny little buttons on touchscreen devices. Come on. Okay, let's try a pencil eraser. Well, somebody's conveniently chewed the top off of that one. All right, go. Oh, Christmas tree! Oh, Christmas tree!
Good afternoon, everyone. It is wonderful to be here.
For Christmas!
One of my favorite events during holiday time.
It's lovely during holiday time. I cannot remember which holiday it is, but it's wonderful holiday time. I remember celebrating as little girl growing up in Chicago on mean streets of South Side of Chicago. What a time it was. But there she was, taking the mask off, when in fact, the official policy of Children's National Hospital says everyone must wear a mask at all times while in any Children's National facility to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Because after all, melanoma has had COVID-19, and for all we know, she's still sitting there spewing particles. This is one of my favorite events during holiday time, and I'm very excited and looking forward to reading a book. Some book. I have one here, is said to be American holiday classic, called My Pet Goat. I will now read it upside down in honor of George W. Bush.
She continued and said, I'm thinking of you all. Stay strong and well. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Who gives a fuck about Christmas? I don't think that's going to go away. Between the I really don't care to you. But there were two children there. Most of them watched virtually because it was almost a lead pipe cinch that she'd do something stupid, like take her mask off. And even as she left the room after reading a rousing rendition of Oliver the Ornament Meets Marley and Joan and Abby by Todd Zimmerman. Is any kin to this Bob Zimmerman? I hear he sell all songs. I would like to own a Bob Zimmerman song. Nope, even as she left, she still didn't put her mask back on. Because not only who gives fuck about Christmas, who gives fuck about little children? They are not little rich children. They are just little sick children. And I really don't care. Do it, you? Yes, yeah, she's so easy to despise, isn't she? Jesus. Trumptanic Tuesday. And so there's still not a lot of give up in these jackasses. Consider that now, even though Joe Biden is the winner of the Electoral College vote, well, I mentioned Lynn Wood last night. He kept tweeting. Mainstream media CCP propaganda wants people. I guess it would be SSR. CCP. Wants people to believe real Donald Trump will attempt a military coup of U.S. government. Errant nonsense. I believe that's A-R-R-A-N-T, but I could be wrong. He spells it with an E. President Trump must act to save country and freedom. Time to move on EO on foreign interference and order martial law to clean up election. The emergency order on foreign interference. And so Sidney QAnon Powell responded to that saying, exactly. And that was in anticipation, or that was soon followed by the stock up on Second Amendment supplies tweet. And it was there's still a lot of fallout from the rally. The little clavern, the spontaneous pop-up clavern meetings that took place in cities across America, places like Harrisburg and Lansing and D.C. and Madison, Atlanta and the like. And the Oath Keepers were there. Via some jackass by the name of Stuart Rhodes. He leads the Oath Keepers. And he was echoing L. Lynn Wood. I'm not fear-mongering. But understand, these dumb bastards really do want some shooting to get started. But of course, it's not, you know, they'll be far, far away from it more than likely. If it does get started, because this is a classic case of, come on, let's you and him fight. And so this past Saturday, we got this. We got this in, Eric Metaxas, that bloody fool,
in something that resembles conversation with this Stuart Rhodes jackanapes.
SOCOM to go seize all the files, all the databases, and he's to free Julian Assange and put him in charge of doing a data dump to display to all of you all the skeletons out of the closet into the streets. Show the world who the traitors are, and then use the Insurrection Act to drop the hammer on them. And all of us veterans who swore that oath, until you're age 65, you can be called up as the militia to support and defend the Constitution. He needs to know from you that you are with him.
Stuart Rhodes would probably faint dead away, pass out, or at least need a package of snack crackers before he marched past mile marker one.
If he does not do it now, while he is commander-in-chief, we're going to have to do it ourselves later in a much more desperate, much more bloody war. Let's get it on now while he is still the commander-in-chief. Hoo-ah!
Yeah, hoo-ah! Dang, that's cool how he hollered hoo-ah, and he's wearing his black cavalry hat and... Yep, that's right. You go over that ridge, General Custer. But those aren't women and children waiting for you down there. Those are Sioux Braves and Cheyenne. But you go, General, you go.
So did you get that? He doesn't want... later on, it's going to be a lot bloodier and nastier, so let's get it nice and bloody now while Donald Trump's still president. Now, if you're talking about overturning the elected government of the United States, call me crazy, but wasn't there a time in this country when people's entire lives were ruined for less? Wasn't there a time in this country when there was an American Communist Party and they got together because they were all, many of them were pretty well heeled, and they'd sit there and drink scotch on the rocks or, Gibson's or vodka gimlets or whatnot. And they'd talk about how one of these days, you know, we're going to, the government of the United States will be, I'm sorry, I don't mean for him to sound like Joey, but, you know, well, whatever. And we're going to set up a workers' paradise here. And their lives were ruined forever, many of them. Some died. There was no talk of bloody revolution and slaughter in the streets. People went to jail. In Joey's Journal a few days or maybe a couple of weeks back, he was talking about Dalton Trumbo, who went to prison because he would not participate in the witch hunts and name names. But this guy, in 2021, Stuart Rhodes, you heard what he said. He called for the violent overthrow of the government of the United States of America right now in order to foster a putsch to keep Donald Trump in power past January the 20th, 2021. Now, it's not going to happen. Meal Team 6 is not going to overturn the government of the United States. But by the same token, neither were a bunch of pampered writers and pseudo-intellectuals sitting around in living rooms in Hollywood or New York. They were no threat. In fact, letting them blather like that was probably the best thing that could have been done back then, because it meant that they would spend all of their time and energy arguing amongst themselves as to how best to accomplish the revolution. Jesus, I've seen this stuff in real time.
I've been to meetings, and then not communist meetings or anything, but you know, I've been to where you know people would sit around and talk about their fondest dreams being the deindustrialization of America or bringing on the apocarev, the apocalypse revolution. When one of these days all of our environmental sins catch up to us at the same time and foster, oh, I don't know. I'm not telling tales out of school because I'm sure every one of those meetings was infiltrated by someone from government. Not that they were particularly secret to begin with. But what this Stuart Rhodes punk is talking about is perforce a matter of calling on people for an assault upon the president-elect of the United States and the vice president-elect of the United States, and presumably those people that have been named to be part of the president-elect's cabinet. And when you call for violence like this asshole just did, when you call for violence like he did on Saturday against the incoming president of the United States, we're supposed to have laws that deal with such violent solicitation and ideation. So where the hell was the Secret Service? We already know that Black Lives Matter D.C. organizers criticized D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser for not instructing the D.C. Metropolitan Police to be more vigorous in their enforcement of the law during these Klan rallies on Saturday. We know that the Proud Boys ran through the streets, stole the property of various and sundry African-American churches, and set fire to it in the streets while shouting vulgarities and screaming, "Whose streets? Our streets." And nothing. Nothing. And there's a big difference, and I was having a brief conversation via message with Flavio earlier today, who desperately wants Nancy Pelosi to take action and, by God, punish or refuse to seat or throw out by an act of the sheer force of her will the arguably traitorous members of the House who signed off on calling for a coup against the United States government. Unfortunately, that actually requires a two-thirds vote of the particular body of Congress, in the case of the House, a two-thirds vote of the House, to throw a member out. When you're talking about throwing 100 members out, getting a two-thirds vote when those people still get to vote because they haven't been thrown out yet, well, you come up with what is, for all intents and purposes, a mathematical impossibility. But this is another thing. Pretty sure the FBI has identified the Proud Boys and other right-wing white supremacist, etc. groups as the domestic terrorism threats that they are. In fact, we don't guess, we know. Because it was way, 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 way back in the misty, dim days of the beginnings of the first Obama administration when a report came out from the FBI on precisely that topic, domestic, right-wing domestic violence in the United States. It had actually been commissioned by the George W. Bush administration, but it didn't get finished until Barack Obama was in office. And when it was received, when it was released, my God, Rush Limbaugh probably had to eat two handfuls of OxyContin just to calm down. as did practically other every other white wing blowhard in the country. How dare they speak? My friends, how dare... they're delicious. My friends, how dare they speak about patriotic Americans in such a fashion? This just goes to show that the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, does not love America. And of course he doesn't love America because he wasn't born here. I am America's truth detector.
It's astonishing, were it not for the fact that we all know and operate by and recognize the concept of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican, even to the point of calling for the pardon of Julian Assange, bringing him home and putting him in charge of some sort of government document dump. You'll notice Stuart Rhodes says, do a data dump to display to you all, to all of you, all the skeletons out of the closet into the streets. Show the world who the traitors are. Well, the traitor's standing right there behind a microphone, babbling and burbling and hooting and grunting. But what's interesting out of that is he doesn't think about the data, the only data that remains to be dumped. Back in 2016, the Russians, through the services of WikiLeaks, dumped a shit ton of data from hacked DNC servers. But if you go back and you check the news reports, you'll also find at the same time that they hacked the RNC's servers. But they didn't dump any of the RNC stuff, which one may fairly presume was absolutely juicy. Maybe video of precious Lindsey Graham. Maybe having sex with a mouse or a little boy, or maybe just accepting perfectly innocent check from Russian Division of National Rifle Association. Who knows? And God only knows how much other information about people like Moscow Mitch. By the way, Moscow Mitch kind of got around to acknowledging that Joe Biden is the president-elect of the United States. It's a miracle. The funny part of that, though, is he only did so after his own leader, Vladimir Putin, Putty-Poot, huggable, cuddleable, lovable Putty-Poot, who would not hurt fly, as long as fly has not hurt feelings of lovable, cuddleable, huggable Putty-Poot, congratulated Biden first. That just kind of got all over me. The present Senate Majority Leader of the United States Senate was taking his cues from the murderous dictator of a foreign adversary of the United States who is relentless in its assault on our attempt to do something vaguely resembling democracy. Just let that sink in. Moscow Mitch couldn't acknowledge the impending presidency of Joe Biden until his master, Vladimir Putin, did it first. Wow. Just wow.
But that's where we are. And nobody's going to touch Stuart Rhodes. No humorless people in solid black suits with white shirts and are going to... Sir, would you care to tell us what you meant when you said that we need a militia call-up to defend the Constitution? Who do you want to defend the Constitution from, Stu? And what did you mean when you said, if he does not do it now while he's commander-in-chief, we're going to have to do it ourselves later in a much more desperate, much more bloody war? Were you calling for civil war there, Stu? Be kind of interesting to know where Stu's associations lie. Where the information comes from. Who makes the decisions? Yeah. And, you know, what's his jackass? Eric Metaxas showed up after he'd spoken. Oh, God bless you. This guy's keeping it real, folks. I thought we'd bring a little music from Marion Markarian. Music. And remember, Eric Metaxas is a gospel sharp. He's supposedly a proponent of the religion that worships the Prince of Peace. Except, well, not exactly. And yes, you heard the phone ringing. And that means that our buddy Steve from Georgistan is on the line. I got an alert from Steve earlier today. Hey, Steve.
Raw dog, what's shaking, man?
I don't know it, Gordo. All I know is that our dog's been much happier since we went to with the farmer's dog.
Yeah, I hear you, man. There's quality poops. You got to have them, bro.
And speaking of which, I got one for you.
Oh, here we go.
There was an alert that went out today. My daughter called me from New Mexico because she's still plugged into the news from around here.
I see.
And a young woman videoed herself at dinner in the Central Standard Time Zone has now been postponed indefinitely before I say this.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
She's apparently been... taking cucumbers in the produce section of the local Kroger's and inserting them in her behind and setting them back on the cucumber display.
It's not fun.
At the Kroger's in, wait for it, Beaver, West Virginia.
Oh, man, you can't make
it. Can I have a cowbell? Can I have a cowbell for... Yeah.
Oh, man.
And worse, the Kroger in Oak Hill, West Virginia.
And they know the perp that's doing this?
They're looking for her, yeah.
It's definitely a her?
Yeah.
Man, she's nuttier than a squirrel turd, Bob. What the fuck, man?
But wait, there's more, Steve. That Kroger in Oak Hill, West Virginia? That's my Kroger.
No. You may want to switch.
That Kroger. Pig, that no. That Kroger in Beaver, West Virginia.
Yes.
That's Boss Man Wayne's Kroger.
You might want to go to the Wiggling Pig, man. Just leave the Kroger alone. Or stay away from the cucumbers. For God's sake, don't eat any cucumbers, man.
And it's only because of our industrial food supply that she does this, because cucumbers are kind of spiny, but not by the time that they've polished them all and you know, dipped them in a light coating of wax. You know, it goes right in.
Oh, gee, ouch. There's some twisted people out there, brother. I mean, just, you can't make this shit up.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, at this point in time, licking the ice cream seems kind of banal, doesn't it?
Yeah. Kind of puts a whole new perspective on everything, doesn't it? Keep a corner of the road. The rodent don't get you. The E. coli cucumbers will.
Jesus, Steve.
Just when you think it can't get any crazier, what is it? Grab some space, man.
Oh, my God.
One of the reasons I called, Bob, if I may.
Yeah, but that's not why you called. Right, right.
Right. No, I didn't want to talk about cucumbers. That's for damn sure. But there seems to be a lot of consternation about January 6th and the slate of electors. And I think I may have it somewhat sorted out. You know, I'm not the end-all of end-all. I just listened to what C-SPAN this morning and what the moderator said, and they have to choose their words very carefully. Because, you know, those maggots will hold them to every word. And keep in mind, we are getting into uncharted territory here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But the way I understand this is, and please correct me, because you know a lot more about this than I do, I just want to put a lot of consternation to rest. If somebody in the House has to object, which, you know, there's 125 of them, that's no problem. Then somebody in the Senate has to agree to object. Probably not a problem. Between Mitch, I mean...
Well, we got Ron Johnson. We got Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. We got Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America.
But here's the rub, Bob. And this is what I didn't know, and this is what I picked up. And please, I encourage everybody to watch the first hour of C-SPAN. It's highly entertaining if you could take maggots just losing their mind for an hour.
It's highly entertaining.
If your blood pressure.
Welcome to bad political theater. I'm Stephen Pince Garnell. Yes.
But if they come to that, and you got one senator, then they convene, and I believe it's for 2 hours. Is that correct?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay. Then it's majority vote, okay? The Senate would have to have a majority, and here's the rub. So would the House. You control the House, and even the Senate, okay? They had 18 re-elections for Republican seats. Is that correct? Somewhere around there? I'm spitballing. So
yeah, you mean they picked up seats? Yeah.
Yes, okay. So that means even if some seismic shift happened, okay, that means all those 18 senators, if they're going to say the presidential election was, you know, rat-effed, then they would have to agree that their election was rat-effed, and I don't think they're going to want to go through that. Do you?
Well, I'd like to think you're right, but the only thing under consideration is the Electoral College, and the Electoral College touches only upon the presidency.
But couldn't it be argued, hey, if it's this squirreled up, then maybe you didn't get your seat, Lindsey? Or maybe you didn't get your seat, Mitch. Couldn't that be argued?
Under those circumstances, no. Because what would happen, as I understand it, is if they were successful, then the whole thing would just then be thrown into the House.
Okay, let's back up then. We control the House.
I know where you're going here. It's not about the cat, Steve.
I know where you're going here. But, you know, and that's where the guy from C-SPAN was trying to call out some maggot this morning. He's like, are you sure that you're going to be able to do what you're thinking that you're going to be able to do? He didn't say it exactly like that.
Well, absolutely, MAGA. We're going to MAGA do it, MAGA.
Yeah. Yeah, he said absolutely. And the guy from C-SPAN says, now, you know that the House is controlled by the Democrats. They have the majority. So that's where all this ambiguity comes into play. Do they have
Oh, but there's something you're not taking point? Into account.
Do they have to agree on point, though, as a majority, that, hey, something is not copacetic here before it goes back to the House?
They would have to have a majority vote, but you're failing to take something into account, my dear friend.
Please enlighten me.
What's going to happen is after Mo Brooks, Les Brames, and Louis Asparagus Gohmert, and brand new member of the House, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and that ilk, once they voice their objections, then that will be the signal for Q, remember Q,
Q will then come in and arrest all the Democrats, and the Republicans will be the only ones left to cast their votes. Oh, you laugh.
A little levity never hurts.
Well, under any ordinary circumstance, that should be levity. But these people, with all their hearts, believe this.
But to my point, Bob, it would take a seismic shift, and it can happen. A meteor could hit the Earth. We could have a polar shift tonight. But it would take a pretty bizarre seismic shift for them to be able to pull off what they're trying to pull off. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely and wholeheartedly.
So I just, you know, there's a lot of fear and consternation out there. I see it, and I'm trying to, you know, I Kipple a lot. I read the poem If constantly. That gives me comfort. So I recommend, you know, if you find yourself in a dark place, check it out.
Yeah, if you can keep your head when all about you, you're losing theirs.
Right. Don't invest in lies. Don't believe in lies. It just goes in, it covers it all. Oh, Rudyard, man. He's words of wisdom. So that's my recommendation.
You may talk of gin and beer when you're quartered safe out here and you sent to penny fights and all to shot it. But when it comes to slaughter, you will do your work on water and you'll lick the blooming boots of him that's got it. Yeah.
Sorry.
So,
I mean, you're a Kipling fan. No. You know what that is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I Kipple frequently.
So but let's back up for just a minute.
Okay.
I mean, I've introduced Q into the equation.
You're really getting out there in the weeds, brother.
I ain't. They are. I mean, remember, these are people who think that the ankle boot that Biden is wearing is actually hiding his home confinement ankle monitor. I don't make this stuff up.
I know. And again, I don't want to give anybody any false comfort, but I don't want anybody freaking out either. We are in uncharted waters. This is never
technically no, to a certain extent, because for instance, the 1802
right. There's that
election There's between that. Jefferson and Adams and
but did they
Aaron
get
Burr.
To the point where the House and Senate both agreed, "Hey, these slates are screwed." Did they get to that point?
Yeah, the House determined the presidency after like 35 ballots.
That's interesting. Let's back up. Now, okay. Before it got to that point, wouldn't it have to be House by majority saying, "Yeah, this is screwed"?
Well, you're talking about a constitutional mechanism,
right? That's what I'm trying to wrap my head around. And that's what the guy at C-SPAN was trying to make clear to this maggot. Now, maybe he's got it wrong. They're not the end-all of end-alls. But they do have to choose their words carefully. And go back and watch the first hour, and you'll see the point that I'm trying to convey.
I think I understand it. Steve in New York is trying to get in, and I don't have any way to bring him on. Because Skype is being weird.
Okay.
You want to see what Steve's got to say?
Sure. And I'll tell Steve I said hi. And Bob, thanks for taking my call, my man.
Thanks for making it. My pleasure.
All right.
Steve, are you still there? Are you there, Steve?
I am, yes.
Good, good.
Hey, I wanted to call and talk about this a little bit. What was I going to say? This has been done before. We've seen this exact thing before. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. If you remember, first of all, in 2000, a number of the people from the delegation from Florida tried to do this. I don't know if you remember this. This is when Al Gore presided over his own defeat. However, so what happened was that the number of the people from members of Congress in the House objected to the electors in Florida There was no objection in the Senate, so nothing happened. However, in 2004, a number of the people from Congress folks, from Congress members of Congress from Ohio objected, and there was a senator who agreed. So we've seen this process play out. The only thing I was reading the law. It's 3 U.S.C. Section 15. The problem is it's one big long paragraph, and it just – I would have to sit and break it out because, of course,
yeah, they never write those. Yeah, hardcore parsing.
Yeah. But I think that the only people who can object are the people – have to be from that state. So, you know, and – there are plenty of them. I mean, my personal view is that I'm not afraid – at this point, I'm not afraid that we're going to have a situation where it gets put into the House. I'm not afraid that we're going to have a situation with actual competing electors.
No, this is going to be bizarre political theater.
Yeah, this is gum up the word. This is Jim Shorts, Jordan, et cetera, just doing what they're going to do just because they want to do it, just because they can. These are rotten, disgusting, and dare I say, anti-American, certainly anti-small-D Democratic, just pieces of garbage. But I wouldn't be surprised if the actual counting of the electoral votes – you know, it's not going to be a routine thing like it normally is with the two people from each house sitting there counting. You know, it's going to be – I wouldn't be surprised if it takes hours and hours, if not more than one day to do it.
Bearing in mind that it's supposed to be more or less of a formality.
Yeah. But, you know – you know, what we have been saying for 4 years is, number one, however weird you think today is, tomorrow is going to be much weirder. And number two, every time you say, oh, that just can't happen, is usually ends up being some sort of prophetic. It's probably gonna. So.
Yeah. And what you'll have is a lot of posturing and a lot of Mo Brooks, Les Brames, jumping to his feet and hollering, Mr. Speaker! And silly horse shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it'll be great for the for-profit media because they'll have wonderful ratings numbers. And we'll be kind of right back where we were in 2016 when Les Moonves said Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's something else I want to tell you. I just did some research. I don't know if you knew this, but Hillary Clinton was actually an elector in New York. Which I thought that was just what I saw that. I'm like, that's just delicious. And the other thing I want, and I've been trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that's that old Milwaukee beer commercial. You know, it don't get much better than this.
Yes, yes. And something else people seem to not remember. Trump did not receive 306 electoral votes in 2016.
Well, that certainly has been bruited about.
There were two faithless electors, so he only received 304.
I thought those faithless I thought those faithless electors turned from Hillary.
No, that I've actually looked it up. They turned from Trump. In any event, he only received 304. Now, I wish this would get more widely reported because I would love to see him go absolutely nuts at the fact that he received less electoral votes than Biden did.
Oh, that would be beautiful. So,
I am.
Well, so here's the next question then. Do you get what I'm saying about their reliance on Q? It's pure insanity.
At least. that and just let me make sure I understand, basically that the signal's going to be for them to do what?
Yeah, they're going to have.
Are we really here?
Yeah, we're really here. Without a single bottle of old Panther piss to our names. We're here.
And see, every time the
Stuart Rhodeses of the world. You work there. You know how D.C.'s laid out in terms of its borders and whatnot. They'll be waiting just to goddamn cross the river, cross the state line in Virginia with their goons. I haven't seen that call go out, but I'll bet you. And getting ready to march and defend the Constitution by overturning a Democratic election.
But it was fraudulent. I keep saying to myself, why doesn't somebody say to them, well, if Biden's was fraudulent, why are the Republicans who were elected to the House, why did one get stolen and not the other? Then before I even get done saying that to myself, I think, Steve, you're trying to use rational thought and logic with people who don't. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I don't even try anymore. It's like I don't even try to explain or question. Don't even try. Why? You know, it's like it's the same with the bullshit of we need to unite. I'm not – fuck uniting. I have no interest in uniting with racists and bigots and homophobes and terrorists and – I'm not interested. I'm interested in exercising power when we win. Fine. If you win again,
and
you
I'm can have power. Right. And I'm interested in exercising power, and I'm interested in building a good faith base going forward. If mm-hmm. you are QAnon, if you are any one of these bullshit white supremacist so-called militia groups, and they are not militia groups. They're just domestic terrorist organizations. If you're any of those things, you're not acting in good faith, and you really should have no voice in governance. I mean, there's nobody for me to look at beyond the footlights here because it's radio. But Steve, do you understand what a stark difference there is between a guy on this past Saturday standing in Washington, D.C., calling for a bloody war against a new president and his government, and a bunch of egghead intellectual writers sitting around drinking scotch and talking about the revolution of the proletariat?
Of course.
Where
one leads to violence directly and one doesn't.
Right. I mean, this guy is advocating straight up terrorism, the Stuart Rhodes, but at the same time he's engaging in stochastic terrorism, trying to gin somebody up to the job that so that it can't come back on him. And he's walking around free. That's what astonishes me. If you can't yell movie in a crowded firehouse, and you can't, then you damned well shouldn't be able to say, we are going to have a bloody revolution later.
I mean,
there's actually a law in the books against calling for the overthrow of the United States government.
Right. Which, putting aside the fact that I don't like laws, I don't like the notion of sedition being illegal. But that's a whole other issue.
Well, there's a difference between calling for a change in government and calling for, you know, bumping off your political enemies.
True enough.
And I can understand why a competent government would make laws against the latter and not the former. But lives were ruined over intellectual, theoretical conversations But nothing. I mean, there's so many of these things. There was that creep Rick Wiles calling for the bloody assault on the chief health officer of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania solely because she's trans.
Jesus.
And I know it doesn't seem like there's a connection, but in a country that may very well be approaching its, if not past its sell-by date, in a way, the stupid story about the cucumbers in my Kroger's has an admittedly tenuous, but I still think connection to the rest of this goofy bullshit. Whether it's liquid barcodes in the vaccine or calling for a bloody revolution. We're a country gone mad.
Yeah, I was just going to say the crazy's turned up to 11. The problem is the dial has broken off.
Yeah, and I presume you saw, if you didn't see it live, you saw clips of Biden's address last night.
I did not.
And I appreciate what he was trying to accomplish. I'm going to work just as hard for those of you who didn't vote for me as those of you who did. Well, that's a nice piece of political pablum that worked in generations past. You know, it goes back to greasy-headed old Reagan heading into the operating room looking at the surgeon saying,
well, I certainly hope you're a Republican.
And that's that decent, decent surgeon saying, Mr. President, I think we're all Republicans right now. That's the America we want to be. But that's an America that is almost quaint at this point.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you say that. I think, you know, I worked on the Hill in 1996. So I was in the second session of the first Congress when Newton Leroy, when the Republicans had, I mean, that was a bigger political earthquake. I think they gained 54 seats that year in the House alone. And I remember, you know, even though I was a Republican at the time, fairly conservative, although not nearly as conservative as I was when I was younger.
You grew up.
It really made me, yeah. Yeah. What really made me, and I think I find this, I think that the seeds of this may have been planted prior. However, I think where what I'm about to say really germinated in that time, and that was where you know, something like the moral majority, people use religion to motivate themselves to seek political power. However, it went, and you can make a very good case that during the civil rights movement, that was a not make a good case. I mean, it was clear that that's the biggest people proponents of that, at least in one regard, were, you know, preachers and religious folk. But it was different. It's one thing that you allow your faith to motivate you. It's another thing where you wrap your faith up in your politics such that God is on your side rather than this is what motivates me. And that's the huge thing I saw with the GOP there was religion became infused with political ideology. So much so that when you get to that point, when you think, quote unquote, your politics is on, quote unquote, God's side and God is on your side, you're no longer at the point where it's, you know, I think I'm right in what I want to do, and I think that person's wrong.
Well, you're past, you know, hope at that point. You're past hope and you're past help.
You're past help. And it went from one side thought they was right, they were right. One side thought it was and the other side thought it was right too. One side thought the other side was actually evil. And while listening to and considering someone you disagree with or you think is wrong is one thing, listening to and considering someone you think is evil, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen.
It endangers your soul.
Yes. And that's the big thing that I saw in 96, and that's where I think a lot of this comes down to, that we are at the point where it's no longer a matter of disagreeing. It's a matter of you're just evil. And once you're there, once that's the chasm between the two sides, and we'll just assume two sides, even though that's not really realistic. Once that's the chasm, it's unbridgeable.
Well, let me challenge that just a wee tiny bit. Let's use, for example, because, I was on air during its early days. Let's consider the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was a war that we started against a country that had not lifted a finger against us.
True.
And in prosecuting it, we used things like white phosphorus and depleted uranium munitions.
Mm-hmm.
We committed war crimes and atrocities. And to your point, it had started with George W. Bush making citation to an axis of evil. They tried to kill my daddy. And there's that magic word. Yep. And he went on, and largely through the efforts of Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicked you, slaughtered 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians. They were those statistical excess deaths that we hear about now. People who, had George W. Bush not started that war, would have been alive past the date that they were dead. And I remember what passed for an anti-war movement at that time, and we did bandy words like evil about. Because the other side had declared that they had the power to declare good and evil. And we said, slaughtering children in an Afghan wedding party is, that's pretty much as close to evil as you're going to get. And so, I wonder if there's evil and then there's evil.
I was just going to say, one sounds, it's almost like here's the subtle difference. There's an evil thing that you can do evil things, but you may not be an evil person or not culpable. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but take a person like, even a person like Hitler or Ted Bundy, people like this who did horribly evil things, but one wonders if, to what extent were they so deluded that
I know what you're doing, and this is because of what they did to you in law school. You're questioning mens rea.
Well, okay. But it's even, but I mean, I've always kind of thought that, and what it comes down to is, it's the notion of, people talk about, moral, people lambaste moral relativism. Well, I'm sorry, but there are very few things that are moral or immoral in every single circumstance. I never will forget, I was in law school and we had a discussion. There was a guy who was a former Marine in one of my classes, and he gets up and he says he doesn't believe in moral relativism. And I had it took me off guard, but if someone said that to me today, who was a former Marine, I would say, I would laugh at their face and say, well, are you stupid? And at which point I would say to them, so is killing immoral? So what? And of course he would say no.
Not always.
He would say not always. At which point I would say, if he were smart enough, you do understand you just expressed moral relativism. So,
damn that Socratic method. And that's what I was about to say. Anybody who thinks that this is not a relativistic world, especially where morals are concerned, has never spent any time with Socrates or with Socrates via Plato. Because what pissed the ancient Greeks off to the point that they handed him a cup of hemlock and said, no, bub, drink up, we insist, was the fact that he was corrupting the youth, and the way he was corrupting the youth was pointing out that all of this, all of these things that were supposed to be hard and fast rules weren't.
I mean, I think there are things that probably are. It would take a while to think about it. But I mean, to me, the clearest example is killing always wrong? Well, if a person is ill to the point of no return, and they're in extreme and utter insane pain and miserable, at least one could argue that killing the person is the moral thing to do, particularly if they are cognizant of it and cognizant of the implications of someone killing them. It is, however, not proper to walk up to a person on the street and shoot them in the head.
Of course, Jesus, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, might disagree, Steve, because his daddy said, thou shalt not kill, and then said, no, really, go unto the Edomites and kill every last living male and old man and old woman, beasts of the field, birds of the air, things that that crawl upon the dust of the earth, but save the little virgins for me and the priests. So, on the one hand, Jesus' daddy says, don't kill, thou shalt not kill. On the other hand, he says, die under limited circumstances. Jesus comes along, however, and he's like, did I stutter?
True. Now, it's interesting. What I'm about to say is a discussion for another time. But that comment that you made is the perspective of a person who comes with a decidedly Protestant, literal, fundamentalist view of the Bible. I don't want to get too much into this. In the Catholic tradition,
you're heading for Augustine's just war theory.
No, I'm not.
I'll be darned.
No, I'm talking about a biblical interpretation concept. In Catholicism does not say that God wrote the Bible. Catholicism is, or at least a legitimate part of it, says people wrote the Bible with pondering and reflection and looking at their current times and beginning to question. And here's what and I'll give you an example of this. A fundamentalist, or a person who thinks, who who thinks that the Bible, that God wrote the Bible, would say, you know, the parts about slavery, how you treat slaves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in probably, was it, I think, I don't know if it's Leviticus, it might be Deuteronomy, part of Genesis, whatever it is, would look at that and say, God is condoning slavery. A less fundamental way of looking, fundamental as in fundamentalist way of looking at that, is no, that's not what's going on there. What's going on there is you have a person or people who look around and they see a common institution slash practice in there where they live. And something, it's some piece of reflection, something inside them, in from the faith person of faith, some sort of quote unquote inspiration or reflection, or we'll call it mysticism, begins to tell those people, this is, something's not right about this. Where they begin to reflect on it and say, where they begin to question it in certain instances, which is why there are caveats and conditions on how you treat slaves. Now, please understand, I'm not – you understand I'm not – all I'm
no,
saying
but,
is
but in,
it's a
in,
much different
in,
way of looking at
in
it.
In antebellum America, justifying chattel slavery American style with the Bible was not solely the province of the Protestants.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Yeah, you
oh,
got to remember, Georgetown exists. Georgetown no. University exists to this day.
Oh, I know. I'm not disagreeing
because
with that.
Of the,
That's why
because
I say,
of their ownership of slaves.
Sure, I'm not. What I'm saying is number one, things, you know, ways of looking at that at the Bible change over time, and there isn't a way. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to think where I was going with all of this. But certainly in 20th or late 19th and 20th century and early 21st century where we are now, views on that vary largely by that I don't want to say, we'll say more evangelical and non-evangelical, which can mean, you know, higher church Christians and Catholics and whatnot versus your more evangelical fundamentalist. So it would be hard to argue that that's not a divide. And then one last thing I'll say, then we'll get on to something else is, for instance, you know, people look at the Isaac, you know, Abraham Isaac story as a condemnation of child sacrifice and this weird quote unquote test of faith. However, you can go back and read some of the, that's where I find the Talmud kind of interesting, which is basically like, that's how our law works in the U.S., where you have Talmudic writings say that wasn't the message of that at all. And in fact, the intention, Abraham's intention, was not to kill his son. That it was a story, again, a reflection, a parable to condemn child sacrifice, which was a common practice in that part of the world at that time. And that's not some, you know, weirdo non-mainstream rabbis. That was an interpretation. Okay, moving beyond that, I don't know how we got into.
Well, we were. It's my fault. We should probably still be talking about cucumbers, but.
Oh, you know, I heard that, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That was one of those that immediately sets off a certain portion of the Horn Family Community Congregation. I got a note. I got a note from our buddy Jug of Punch, who just said, Mo is fixing up some beef stroganoff. Fuck you.
I don't think I've ever been fuck you'd by Jug of Punch before, but I certainly acknowledge that I probably had that coming.
Well, Bob, I would be worried if anybody in our little congregation in here weren't that didn't upset them. I would hope there's nobody here going, I don't see a problem there.
Naturally, with the voice.
Yeah.
Is that Southern?
Probably. Oh, by the way, you mispronounced Gallipolis tonight.
No, I did. I said police, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Gallipolis.
Gallipolis rhymes with piss.
Yeah, it's just Gallipolis. Two syllables.
Gallipolis.
Gallipolis. I emailed you, but it got bounced back. So.
Yeah, I don't know how many emails I'm missing right now. No, we got where we got because I tried to take a run at this idea of manifest evil, pure evil.
It's hard.
Well, it is. And what makes it particularly problematic is that, you know, I say that it's okay to take a moral stand and say that it is wrong to the point of evil to start wars with people who haven't done anything to you and to do it based upon a pathetic tissue of lies.
No, I was going to say, you know, it's funny when I said we'd have to think about, I think that's one of those, but Bob, that's the difference between saying murder is evil versus killing.
Yeah. And I mean, it even varies from culture to culture. Both the Japanese and ancient Roman cultures felt like suicide was a perfectly acceptable part of living and dying. That there were darn good reasons that you would bump yourself off. Shame, disgrace, or even financial considerations. Mm-hmm. The Romans were some very practical people, but what? Just if I could for a moment... Just to turn it back for a second, there is a hell of a difference between objecting on moral grounds to a verifiable, factual, real-time event, like, say, attacking a small country that's never attacked you and killing a million innocent civilians, versus thinking a majority of your fellow Americans are evil because you believe there's a secret person who goes only by the letter Q who's working covertly and in concert with Donald Trump to take down a cannibal pedophile ring headquartered in the basement of a pizza joint that doesn't have a basement. One is a paranoid delusion, and the other is a moral objection. And by way of sort of playing with the within this space, I had a note from Jude. Jude had called in. She was on the stress line, and she said it's a very good dialogue occurring and must continue. My call was to remember the Sandy Hook anniversary yesterday, December 14th, 2012, and the slaughter of 20 of those being little first graders. Remember for a moment, if you would, where you were when hearing of that horror. I know exactly where I was. And how President Obama was present, enclosed in that grief-ridden huge room with the parents, families, and community. So profound. And as he broke down and cried, internally sought to offer some quality of compassion, even knowing it was impossible. That's a degree of fortitude wrapped in empathy, which I find profoundly rare. We will endure, as Sandy Hook is a beacon of loving, compassionate light. They chose healing. And all of that is true, and it is a further example of the compassionate spirit, and I would dare say it's reminiscent of the compassionate Buddha, that Jude carries with her every day and everywhere she goes.
On the other hand, however, do we say that Adam Lanza, who was obviously not all there, was evil? No, he did evil things. It's like something Agnes told me when we start having children. Never tell the children they are bad. If they have done something bad, tell them what they've done was bad. Never tell them they are bad. And I tried to abide by that. On the other hand, however, Mother Lanza, who was gone down the prepper hoarder rabbit hole and had guns all over her house, and there was a dynamic with Adam Lanza's father, and it became this toxic whirlwind. Can you take the word evil and apply it to Adam Lanza or Mother Lanza? I don't think so. There's no doubt that their acts were, but I think it's subject to question whether they were. Now, one step further removed. How about all the Republican congressmen who jumped out there and said, well, you know, it's too early to talk about guns or anything. We got to grieve and send our thoughts and prayers and all you damn Democrats all the time trying to politicize just because somebody goes wild with an AR-15. And from that day unto this, Steve, exactly nothing has been done to assuage the grief or to address the problems that created Sandy Hook. Oh, well, obviously he's mentally ill. I have yet to see a Republican stand up and call for universal mental health coverage for every American. Well, you can't do nothing about guns because Second Amendment. And so those Republican legislators are completely sunk in the myth and the wickedness, there's another word, of a cult of gun fetishists. And so we're back into that relativist swamp. How then do we reconcile the difference between real wickedness, real heartbreaking evil, versus this weird, paranoid, sick, twisted, bizarre horse shit that way too many of the people who voted for Donald Trump believe in as much or more than they believe in their own Christian salvation? How? Because I'm whooped.
This is when in the... In instances like that, it's called power. It's called politics. We win and make sure they don't have a say. I mean, honestly, let's think about this very basically. What are elections other than competing value systems to affect policy to carry out those value systems? The reason we are at this point, the reason we are where we are with guns, for instance, is because the people of that ilk took power seriously within, they played the game better than the other side. I'm trying to depersonalize it, played the game. They got power, the other side didn't. They got to have judges on the Supreme Court who interpreted the Second Amendment, for instance. We didn't. They got people in power who got to pass laws. We didn't. I think the issue is less about reaching people than it is about we're going to get power and do things our way. We're not going to take anyone's rights away, although they may see it that way. But I think, let's be honest here. Let's switch this. Had the we'll say the left or leftist or leftish side of the spectrum had as much political success as the right has since, say, 1980. I could probably say back to 1964, but let's say 1980. A lot of what you're talking about here, we would not have had. Had Al Gore been president, I would basically guarantee no Iraq. I could probably say less likely a Sandy Hook, because there would have been certain laws.
No 9/11, maybe.
That. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think really what it comes down to is this, and you and I have said this a million times. Politics is not about convincing. It's about making sure, it's about motivating your people to take to try and take power.
Yeah. Or to act. In some cases, the modern binary is to try to get people to act in their own interests versus the other side trying to get people to act the wielder of power's interests. If you've got two parties, one of which says hungry people shouldn't starve to death, and the other party says, well, all you need is some personal responsibility, then the battle is pretty clearly joined. And I know how much you hate the why do they vote against their own interests argument as much as I do. But sometimes it applies.
Well, I agree. And I don't like that argument. And I had this argument with somebody who's very young. She's in college, and when she's like, why do they vote against their interests? And I said, it's very arrogant of you to say that. Well, why is it arrogant of me? I said, they have a different self-interest. I said, their interest is, you know, making sure the cores don't get married and making sure the little babies don't get killed. And she says to me, yes, but that's not their interest. And I thought, this is the problem right here.
Oh, don't get me started. And yet I say that because I'm going to start. I have been on more occasions than I care to count in congressional offices. And I was the token hillbilly. And we'd have some privileged young person with good intentions. And we'd be talking about mountaintop removal. And we'd be talking about the health problems and all of the damage and destruction it creates. And how it's not even worth, it's not even worth doing if you stop externalizing the costs. And as often as not, I'm the one using big phrases like externalize costs. And then the well-meaning, young, privileged college kid points at me and says, we've got to help those people. Because we were in a congressional office of which she was a constituent. And so when she meant we, she meant she and the people in that congressional district as represented by that member of the House. And those people were me and anybody in Appalachia affected by mountaintop removal. We've got to help those people. And mm-hmm. I tried to be as gentle as I possibly could when we got out of the meeting, because there would always be kind of a little debrief. And I'd say, listen, I appreciate your passion. I appreciate your concern. But we're never going to get anywhere as long as people in Appalachia are those people. If you continue to do this work, please see to it that that phrase never comes out of your mouth again. And she apologized all the way back to our rendezvous point. I said, stop. Don't apologize to me. No apology necessary. Just please don't do it anymore. Please learn to see people differently, not see people as different. And I thought
I like
I thought that was kind of profound at the time, but yeah. So I get your point. And yeah, it is a problem. And it may be the biggest problem that devils us right now. I mean, I wish I could find it. I've got a poem I wrote years ago out of something like this. Let me just scroll for a minute. The dead air just blows. Damn it.
Hey, listen, I actually need to step off because I have to get home for my cat. I'm gonna continue to listen because I want to hear the poem offline. Is that okay?
Oh yeah, sure. It's just I don't know if I'm gonna find it because I'm looking for it too cursorily, and I thought I had it at one point. Damn it. Rat fart. Well, I know you've got work to do, and I saw some of that work, and Jesus, yeah.
I have to finally, I told you what happened with my roommate, and I have a new place. I just have not been able to move because I've had so much to do the last week, and now I'm finally getting shit out of there and getting to the new place. I don't want to be strangled anymore.
Not being strangled is really the key to the benefits program, Steve.
Yeah, that would be the best, yeah. Yeah. So, listen, my good man, I'm going to run. Be well, take care, and all that other fine stuff, and I will be back on offline here in the next few minutes. So find that damn poem and read it.
Oh, Jesus, I'm scrolling for all I'm worth. You know what? I'll find it. I'm going to run the Green News Report. And that's how I'll find it.
Okie doke. Take care, Bob. Have a good night.
Take care, Steve. Later. Our good buddy Steve from New York, preceded by another member of the Fraternity of Steves, Steve from Georgistan. Note coming in from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Please explain how it only takes two congressmen to object to the Electoral College to vote... The college vote to cause chaos, one in each house. I mean, that's as simple as I can put it. And Todd adds, what Steve and you are proving is that the problem with our law is that it is constantly subject to interpretation. Interpretation is often influenced by extraneous variables that are ever-changing, and that's absolutely true. And that is the fundamental difference between a constitutional originalist textualist like Amy Covid Barrett and someone like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who understood that no constitution can be static, that it must change with the times if it is to remain the driving force of the legal system of the country in question. It really is that simple. But, by the way, we are still stuck on $15 to finish yesterday's funding. If we could finish yesterday's funding, it would be great. God knows we got a lot more bills to pay than that just to keep this all on the air. And sadly, we don't have a bunch of, or not so sadly, we don't have ads from Big Pharma to run. Shingles can be what? Or, you know, do not use this if you've had experiences of harbillary thyroid cancer. She did not say harbulary. She did! But I hate running behind, and it stresses me out. And I don't know if we're going to be on the air tomorrow night because of the big winter storm that's moving in. And Jesus, after that, who knows, it may be Groundhog Day. Rise and shine! It's cold out there. So, anybody caring to jump in, and thanks for meeting Ralph's challenge. That means that Messrs. Warnock and Ossoff get 50 more bucks. Peace. Or, I mean, 50 more bucks to continue the fight to save this nation. And that's, that is a big deal. Jude adds, the current political is force. Current political arena seeks by force, and we, the functioning, have been provided power. The study of kinesiology. Yet this is simply, from my perspective, as there are enormous numbers of us engaged. Great interchange. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, Mike in Cascadia. We are now done with yesterday's funding. That's fantastic. And that is a relief. So now maybe we can, in the remaining half hour or so of the program, take a bite out of tomorrow so we won't be looking at a $600 goal for tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Mike and I had a nice exchange earlier today on my use of the term PEBCAC. Man, the first time I saw that was eons ago, and it stuck with me because I am such a persistent practitioner of it, PEBCAC. Problem exists between keyboard and chair. Happens all the time. Every time you hear me say wrong button, PEBCAC. Every time I think I'm running the program, but no audio is going out. PEBCAC. Now, the little burps where suddenly you hear music where there wasn't music before and then the program comes back, that is not PEBCAC. That's, no, that's the fine folks at Chantel. Well, I guess, and thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just helped us. Mike got there first, and then Jeremy took us down to 285. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you so much. And thanks, all of you, for being there. Damn, I didn't realize I'd written so much. Wow. Well, it's not that important. And you know what? It'll show up in the book that I eventually write. Oy vey, my daughter is telling me more about the cucumber girl. Kid's not okay. God, Arnold! Back to the cucumber, because people keep going back to the cucumber. Who cares about infection? Your real worry is going to be if she's using desensitizing lube. You'll know that you've been affected after cucumber salad makes your lips numb. Oh, you wound me. Oh, God. Your lips numb. Oh, I don't know whether to puke or choke on it. The puke, not the cucumber. Oh, damn. I did it again. That was dinner in the Pacific Standard Time Zone. Shit. Sorry. Thanks. Ralphs tells me the email address is working again. I'm glad to know it. Jack in Shreveport says, see people differently, not as different. It sounds like the congressional aide and you were talking about an issue of otherism. No, this wasn't an aide, Jack. This was a well-meaning young activist. But you were talking about an issue of otherism, except to a lesser degree than situation like racial hatred or hatred of other religions. Yes. Does that make sense? It does. If so, it's such a worldwide and countrywide problem that we have to overcome, and it's not something that gets better on its own. We have to purposefully work on it. And we have to break the cycle of parents and families or institutions like religions indoctrinating children at a young age with beliefs that are destructive. And that last one, oh, that one's the joker. That's the deck that's nothing but jokers. Thanks, Jack. Because children learn to hate. They are not born hating. This from Ralphs. Son of a gun, Steve Schmidt is registering with the Democratic Party. Wow. Well, you know, welcome, Steve. It's a big tent. I hope you can learn how to be one fairly quickly. Jack reminds us, Malloy's been calling some group of people cucumbers. What's that about? I don't know. I'm aware. I heard that, too, and I haven't asked him outright. But, you know, whatever it is, it's brilliant because, well, Malloy's doing it. And Flavio says, so did you mention that Ron Johnson also acknowledged that Biden won and congratulated him after Putin and McConnell? But he's still holding hearings on Wednesday, you know, just to investigate some possible fraud. And Ken Starr's going to testify. Whoop! I wish that was an Onion headline or something, but sadly it's not. Ron Johnson is quickly establishing himself as the biggest, most toxic Johnson in the Senate of the United States. Which brings me back to something from the beginning of the program. Do you reckon, because I thought of the word toxic, you reckon Kristi Noem, the bioterrorist governor of South Dakota, who has been personally responsible for the deaths of God only knows how many South Dakotans, you think she's going to get the vaccine? Of course she will. Yeah. Sadly, that's probably a good suggestion, Jug. Jug of Punch says, time mark your show. You'll lose weight. I know. I don't mean for it to be that way. It just works out that way. By the way, back to the business in the House. Matt in San Francisco said, I don't think they can overturn anything. They can object and muck things up, but the end result will be the same. I think they'll do it. Their goal is to just create chaos, just as the last 4 years have been chaos. Why go out quietly when they haven't done anything quietly for the last 4 years? Oh, that is so true. They are chaos merchants. And they have learned from the very best. Namely, the guy that that seven senators went and visited on, what was it? Was it July the 4th, 2017 or July the 4th, 2018? I think it was July the 4th, 2017 when those senators went to bend a knee to the huggable, snuggleable, cuddleable, lovable pooty-poot instead of marking. I mean, I was talking with my buddy Bo earlier today, and we were talking about just exactly that incident. And I said, when you get right down to it, that's the functional equivalent of holding a satanic black mass on Easter morning. And that's kind of who Republicans are. And the Russians are agents of chaos. That is why the name of the fake evildoer organization was Chaos. Remember? Get smart. Oh, and as for the storm of the decade, Brother Deacon Asa says, far be it for me to attempt to work the Alex Jones corner, but do you ever think maybe the grocers' associations and or the Home Depots of the world slip a few dollars over to the weatherman to gin up these shopping frenzies?
asking for a Jew lizard friend. Damn, Brother Deacon. It's not beyond the realm of speculation, but the thing is, it's such basic panicked primate behavior that I don't think money has to change hands. Because people will do stupid things for free without even being driven to it. As to the cucumber queen, James in Illinois says they should give her a job in quality control. And I'm remiss and overdue, according to Rusty, for Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan's quip. Nuttier than a squirrel turd. So, Steve, you got a cowbell for that. Do you think, Jeremy asks, Americans will ever get to hear robot voice Rush? God damn, this is some slow stage 4 cancer. No kidding. That's what happens when you've got the best healthcare money can buy, I guess. And thanks very kindly to our pal Texas T. Stay safe, man. Think about you down there and all the mask hole COVID idiots. I mean, it's just, we got them too. You just got so much more of them because you're so much bigger than we are. Thank you, Texas T. Texas T just took us down to 265 bucks. 265 to come up even with this evening. Thank you so much. All-time horn moment, Arnold's comment about your lips going numb as you eat the cucumber because cucumber butt bandit used desensitizing lube. I know. That may go down in horn history alongside Steve from Georgia, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan's quip about the 9-year-old bubble gum they found during a colonoscopy. Oh, God. And apparently Gmail is fully back to functionality. Jack in Shreveport says, I decided to check the Google status just to see if it had actually changed from red to green. It actually had. It's the first item in the list. It had been a red indicator when the email wasn't working. I'm surprised it had been red since most services status pages seem to always report that all is well. Sometimes you get past being able to report that. Oh, okay. That makes perfectly good sense. Our buddy Laborman says, I think Malloy uses the term for the term cucumbers for the QAnon jagoffs. That would make perfectly good sense. Thanks. Thanks, Gary. And as for Ron Johnson's hearing, Flavio updates us, the Democrats are bringing Krebs to their star. They'll be bringing witness Christopher Krebs, the former Homeland Security official who was fired by Trump after he defended the security of the election. That ought to be fun and revealing. Yeah, as political theater. Yeah, Flavio also noting the cucumbers in Malloy speech are QAnon cultists. Jeremy pointed that as well. Cucumbers are followers of Q. He mentioned it a while back in... That one deserves to catch on. That one deserves to go national. That one deserves to go viral. So I said a minute ago I was going to go to the Green News Report, and I'm going to do exactly that because I hate it when I forget to play the Green News Report. They do such a good job, Brad and Desi.
It's Tuesday, December 15, 2020.
In the last 20 years, we've experienced twice the number of weather disasters as we did in the previous 20 years.
U.S. on verge of breaking its record for the most billion-dollar disasters in a single year. California insurers canceling homeowner policies due to record wildfires, plus...
5 years after Paris, we are still not going in the right direction.
UN warns world must pick up the pace in cutting carbon emissions.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
To be candid, if there's no change, if we don't do anything to solve our climate change crisis, Florida faces extinction.
Well,
no,
but
no, no.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I remarked the other day we haven't had a lot of explosions of late, but we had a chemical plant explode in West Virginia, and now a fossil fuel explosion in the Middle East.
Yes, a port in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, has been closed after an oil tanker was hit by an explosive device on Monday that damaged the hull but caused no injuries. It was the fourth such attack on oil installations in a month in the region amid the civil war in neighboring Yemen. Here in the U.S., extreme weather is extremely expensive. According to data compiled by NOAA, the U.S. in 2020 is likely to shatter its previous record for the most billion-dollar climate disasters in a single year. Those are individual disasters costing $1 billion or more each. Final numbers for 2020 aren't in yet, but we are likely to obliterate the prior record year of 16 disasters set 3 years ago with a new record of 20 or more billion-dollar disasters in 2020, from the record hurricane season to record western wildfires to the Midwest derecho and more.
Well, why haven't you warned us years ago that climate change would be this expensive?
This is the sixth year in a row in which the United States has seen 10 or more billion-dollar climate-related disasters. The American Red Cross reports that this year, four times more Americans needed emergency disaster housing than the annual average over the last decade.
But remember, we don't have enough money to do anything about it.
It's also affecting insurance. In California, five of the six largest fires in state history hit just this year alone. Bloomberg News reports an increasing number of insurance companies are dropping homeowner insurance policies because of the billions of dollars in wildfire losses.
They're dropping fire insurance policies here in California?
Yes.
That's not good.
In international news, at a virtual climate summit over the weekend, marking the five-year anniversary of the landmark UN Paris Climate Accord, more than 70 world leaders convened to increase their pledged targets for cutting their contributions to greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made global warming. The U.S. was not invited because Donald Trump withdrew from the accord. President-elect Joe Biden has pledged to rejoin it.
Now, we did withdraw. That took place the day after our presidential election this year.
Yep.
But now Joe Biden will be able to get in if he asks nicely, pretty please.
Yes.
Good.
The UN reports that progress has been made in cutting the rate of annual global emissions since the Paris Accord was signed. And global CO2 emissions dropped 7% in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic curbing fossil fuel use. But the annual global carbon budget report warns that the world is falling behind in meeting the Paris emissions targets and projects that global emissions will need to drop by 7% a year by 2030 to avoid the worst impacts of man-made climate change.
So it did drop 7% over the last year, but that was because of the pandemic.
Right.
And you can't have a pandemic every year, darn the luck.
Please no. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said current Paris targets are not enough to match the scale of the crisis, as the impacts of warming already are hitting the planet earlier than scientists predicted.
If we don't change course, we may be headed for a catastrophic temperature rise of more than 3 degrees this century. Can anybody still deny that we are facing a dramatic emergency? That is why today I call on all leaders worldwide to declare a state of climate emergency in their countries until carbon neutrality is reached.
Totally fake accent.
China, Argentina, the UK all announced higher emissions targets. The European Union went even further, committing to slash their collective greenhouse gas emissions by 55% in the next decade, a much higher reduction than previously proposed, in order to reach their net zero emissions target by 2050.
Did you say China increased their targets?
Yes.
Okay, I thought we were told they weren't ever going to increase their targets.
Surprise! Some good news. Japanese automaker Nissan became the latest manufacturer to withdraw from the Trump administration's lawsuit seeking to cancel California's long-standing authority to set its own more stringent car emissions and gas mileage standards. And finally, Tasmania, Australia's island province, has announced it has transitioned completely to 100% renewable electricity.
Those devils. Very nice. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, I'll have to play me some Van Halen after the program's over. So there's a few minutes left in the program, and let's see, a couple of things to check in on just before as we head out the door. We're down to 265 to finish fundraising for this evening. Our pal Kenda out in Missouri posted this, and I saw it, and it's just one of those moments where it fits ever so nicely with what we've been talking about this evening. Dateline Jefferson City, Missouri. As an aside, is in their water. Via the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and Jack Suntrip, a Republican-led, you might want the hockey puck for this, I don't know. A Republican-led House committee voted Monday to approve a resolution that declared Missouri lawmakers have no faith in the validity of the 2020 election results in places like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. It was a 6-3 vote in the committee. And it came after they had had a hearing featuring none other than well-known truth teller Rudy Giuliani, who of course had come to Jefferson City to spread the Rona. I mean, spread bullshit about the no. Well, okay, both. Well, okay, he didn't go to Jeff City. He showed up on Zoom. Still. At least one sane person is still in the Missouri House of Representatives. Representative Peter Meredith, a Democrat, Representative Meredith pointed out that Republicans from, Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr to other Republican so-called leaders, had pointed out that there was no fraud in the electoral process. Questioning Giuliani, Representative Meredith said, are all these Republicans lying? Are they complicit? Are they incompetent? At which point in time, Giuliani told an elected member of the House of Representatives of the state of Missouri, and I quote, to calm down. But Representative Meredith was having none of it. And to the extent that this is a Trump-tanic Tuesday story, the Trump-tanic angle of it is the 6-3 vote in committee to send a resolution to the House. But the other side of the coin is an ovation for Representative Meredith's fearlessness. After Giuliani told Representative Meredith to calm down, Representative Meredith shot back, I am tired of your lies. America is tired of your lies. And they are dangerous, sir. They are dangerous. And so, procedurally, I may be backwards. It may not be going to the House floor. because it was introduced last week by Representative Justin Hill, who brought 66 of his Republican House colleagues along to sign on to a letter asking for debate on the resolution. This cockamamie, dangerous piece of bullshit, which is just, oh, a hair's breadth away from the same kind of thinking that brought on ordinances of secession, has 40 co-sponsors in the House, even though Republicans, of course, even though it's a mere resolution and carries no legal force or effect. Nonetheless, because these are a gang of maggots who are scared to death of their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing maggot constituencies turning on them, nonetheless, this godforsaken resolution calls upon the six states, or rather calls upon the Congress, to refuse to certify the electoral votes of the six states. Now, see, the way this scam is supposed to work is when they refuse to certify the Democratic electors of the six states in January, on January 6th, the sixth state's sixth sheep's sick. The six states' sixth sheets stick. Oy. Well, that would then mean that the electoral votes would go to Trump, and ta-da! He gets to stay in office. He doesn't get indicted for anything. And lo and behold, Q gets to finish Q's work. Yeah. Do you have any idea how jealous I am of states that have responsive, decent governments? Because I am. Here in West Virginia, we've got a supermajority in both houses of maggots. And our legislative session will start in January. And my God, it's going to be Katie bar the door. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised to see the maggot West Virginia legislature declare Q to be an honorary West Virginian. Ugh. So much awful. And the sad thing is, the number of states with decent, responsive state governments is actually a minority of the states in this union. And going forward, that's terrifying. And sort of turning back toward what Steve and I were talking about, how do you unify a divided nation? Because they're not going to unify, forgive me, I wish they would, but they're not going to unify under Joe Biden. And most of those state legislatures probably aren't going to flip. And flipping those state legislatures was the work of a generation funded by things like ALEC, funded in turn by things like Chuck and Dave, the Koch brothers, for exactly these ends: to destroy any sense of national unity. And there may yet come a time. Come? It's here. We're eaten alive by a pandemic because of the work that right-wing chop shops did to tear our sense of national identity asunder. Now, I'm not talking about racism or no. When I say national identity, I'm talking about what Madison was talking about when he said that we're going to have freedom of religion, but he says in the Federalist Papers that he would like to create an idea of civic responsibility as a sort of national secular religion. And to a certain, and it never really took root. Maybe at some point in the 20th century, briefly. But damn. Just damn. And thank you, George. George has taken us down to only $240. I'm so sorry. Only $240 to go to finish fundraising for this evening. Thank you, George. Thank you so very much. We all do so appreciate it. $240. If we could get another $40 in, we'd be down to just, you know, we'd have one third of this evening funded. That'd be wonderful. And just because it's Trump-tanic Tuesday and it's a celebration of Trumpian stupidity, a story from the Daily Beast. I didn't know this was going on, but, well, I'm also equally not surprised. A group of mostly expatriate maggots apparently bet heavily on the election overseas. For the most part in the United States, you cannot wager on the outcome of an election. But now they've lost their asses, these maggots, betting on Trump to win the election. And they, too, are sure that they've been ripped off. It's fraud. And the Daily Beast article cites an individual named Helen. Now, you don't have to be an American citizen to be a maggot. You can just be a fan. And Helen is British, and she lives in Amsterdam. And she wagered that Trump would win the election. She wagered through an outfit called Betfair. And the thing is, after the November 3rd election, she put more money on Donald Trump to win. Ha! Wait a minute. This might come in handy. Yes. It never gets old. No, it just doesn't. Even after Trump had lost, Helen bet more money on him to win. Yeah. Kelly Weil reported, had Trump won re-election, Helen would have won nearly 2.7 million euros, according to screenshots of her Betfair account. But Betfair and other gambling sites closed the books on their 2020 presidential betting on Monday after the Electoral College certified Biden's victory. Now Helen, who says she's lost lost approximately 140,000 euros and believes the election results will be overturned, is joining other bettors in accusing gambling sites of wrongly calling the election for Biden. Then there's another guy from the UK named Jordan Lee, interviewed by the Daily Beast, and he said, I had around 50,000 riding on Trump winning. Oh, that was almost Australian. 50,000 pounds on Trump winning. But they're still pushing Betfair to undo the payouts because they think he can still win. Trump can. There's Billy Betts, a gambler in the UK.
I have a background in political betting over 5 years, and I can say that over this time I've never experienced the scope of passion of the people voting for Trump. Big tech, the mainstream media, and pollsters said Trump had no chance. People believed in Trump so much that they went against the status quo to vote for him.
Well, they lost 50,000 pounds to own the libs. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, P.T. Barnum, you were so right. Even if it's anecdotal. There's a sucker born every minute, and they wear MAGA hats. So, here we are. Time to get out of here. Thanks so much for joining in, everybody. Thank you. Thank you to Marcia. Marcia just knocked us down below $200 to finish the evening. Thank you, Marcia. And so that means tomorrow we will start at $490. That beats the heck out of $500 or $540 or anything like that. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you so very much. We do, all of us, appreciate the support that we get to keep this little independent program on the air. Jack and Shreveport says, UK bettors on Trump election. You think those are the same people that voted for Brexit? I'd almost guarantee double T ya. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And so, as I said, thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers via Patreon and PayPal. Thanks to our a la carte subscribers. Who jump in program to program. This program would not exist without you. And you are a relatively small group out of those who listen to the program. And I thank you for making it available to those who wish to join in. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time on this planet engaging in the program, regardless of how you so do it. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, Fresh Malloy on the way. 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And now we know what cucumbers means. I don't know why I didn't figure that out, but I'm glad y'all did for me. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you have to be out and about, wear your mask, wear your gloves, use hand sanitizer, and wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Maintain your social distance. 10 feet if people are masked. There's not enough distance between you if they aren't wearing one. If you're 100 miles away, there's not enough distance. And for God's sakes, if some girl comes up to you and says, "Hey, you want to buy a cucumber?" Avoid her like the plague. Because she is. Oh, and just one last thing. A sea cucumber eats its own brain. Thank you, Randy. On the other hand, it's possible that land cucumber, wrongly chosen from the Kroger in Beaver or Oak Hill, could eat your brain. Huh? Later, y'all.